This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Simon Constable, an Englishman living in the south of France, but he's returned to his stomping grounds in Scotland. So we get to compare and contrast Simon Constable in paradise, Simon Constable in the extremely romantic and worthy confines of Scotland. Simon, a very good day to you. In order to make my point, I ask about the temperature and the cloud cover and the rain of Scotland on the west coast. You tell me you're near Dumfries. Good day to you, Scotland and good, Simon.
Good day to you, John. It is in the 50s and sunny today, which is lovely. And it's quite unusual because there's usually quite a lot of rain on the west coast of Scotland, as there is on the west coast of England. It's been absolutely delightful and surprisingly so. Now, the 50s temperature is in the daytime. I want to point that out. And in my home in the south of France, it's in the 80s, to give the comparison there, with very little rain at the moment. So quite a big contrast.
Yes. And how long has it been since you've been to back to Scotland?
Almost 2 years.
All right. Have you changed your opinion of what is useful as climate and what is not? Or are you still sentimental about the rain of Scotland?
Well, you know, the rain is great. It keeps it it keeps the country green, just like Ireland is very green. They call it the Emerald Isle, and that's because there's a lot of rain, and both islands, both the island of Ireland and the island of Britain, benefit from the Gulf Stream, which keeps the basically keeps the islands warmer than they would otherwise be. So damp and warm is very good for plants, and that is really good. It's rare to even get a scorcher that kills the plants, the grass, the crops, et cetera, in Britain, and that's part of the reason why it's been a popular place for people to come for centuries.
But you live in the south of France, which is even more popular. Now, in 2021, when you were living in Edinburgh, you attended COP26 in Glasgow, and that was Boris Johnson's time as a prime minister, making lavish promises about net zero. What's it look like in Scotland now, net zero, the regulations that have come in since then?
It's very interesting. It's in Edinburgh, and there are now low emission zones, and that means you can't take your regular car through those emission zones, and that was introduced in Edinburgh in June. So we're now in July, 6 weeks later, and what we're seeing is very little footfall. That's very few consumers, people walking across the town and looking in the shops and buying things. And to the extent that we're seeing a couple of major shops in big places shuttering their doors. And I've got to believe that more will be coming, because there just simply are not many people on the streets. It's normal to have a lot of people in the shopping district all the time, all day, every day. And it isn't happening at the moment, at the height of the summer in Scotland. And I'm wondering what it's going to be like during the Edinburgh Festival, which kicks off in a couple of weeks. So I'm not sure it was a very good idea for the businesses, even though it was the Scottish government's decision to do that.
Let me understand now. You just simply are not allowed to drive cars into major parts of the roadway. Did they provide parking? Are there alternatives? Or is this just a ban and you figure it out?
Well, it isn't a total ban, but it is a ban if you have a fossil fuel vehicle, you know, a gasoline or a diesel vehicle to drive in those areas, unless you get an exemption. I'm not sure how the exemption works, but that really covers most vehicles in the country. If you have an electric car or an electric vehicle, like a bus or a van or a truck or anything like that, then there isn't a problem. But they tend to be very expensive. And Scotland is not a high-income country in many ways. Yes, it's doing better than developing nations, but it's not full of massively rich people. And that means fewer people are going into the town centre because they don't have this electric vehicle and they don't want to get fined. So they go elsewhere. They go to the suburbs to buy things and, you know, maybe take the train into town. But really, there were so few there. I was really stunned in the middle of summer, especially.
Back to France, where you live now. You've written up the Paris Olympics. And that starts in a couple of weeks' time. On the 26th, officially, will be the flame. Lots of preparation in Paris for a celebration. However, France is going through a bad patch now. A lot of turmoil over politics. The recent elections have left us all puzzled how the assembly is going to organize itself. It meets within hours. The 18th, the National Assembly comes together. And you have the left of center dominating the coalition, especially something called France Unbowed, led by men who are sentimentally Marxist, I believe is a fair way of putting them.
That's a fair way, yeah. That's a fair way of putting that.
And then you have the national rally. The farmers, where you live, are coming in third, but have gained a great deal of attention for the presidential contest in 2 years. All that is background, political background, especially Emmanuel Macron being weakened by this excited vote for anybody but Macron, for background for the Olympics. What is the expectation in France about the Olympics? Are people coming? Will it be well attended? And will they make money?
Well, let's start with the first two, which are fairly easy. I think a lot of people will come to the Olympics to watch it. And obviously a lot of competitors will go to the Olympics because they're going to compete there and it's a great opportunity for them. However, those people who are going to watch likely won't be Parisians. I think Parisians are fleeing the city to get away from it because of all the security that will be there and all the hassle that will cause everybody around. So those two are fairly simple and that's normal. I think if you had that anywhere in the world now, people will fly in and the locals will just disappear for a while. On the money front, the odds are against Paris doing well out of this financially. And I've got data from the year 2000 right through to 2020 Tokyo. And this is the Summer Olympics, then 2 years later, the Winter Olympics, and then two years after, yeah, that another Summer Olympics. Now, if you look at all of these, we see massive losses and tiny gains. And in fact, there are more losses than there are gains in this. So of the Olympics during that period, one was break even, and that was London 2012. That was just a simple break even. It made no money, but it didn't lose any either. So that's pretty good. And then you have five summer games losing money, and a lot of it, the largest of which was Athens 2004, and they lost $14 billion on that. That was the highest loss. And then there were others like Sydney, which was $1.5 billion, which doesn't seem too much. And then Turin in 2006, $3.2 billion loss, and Rio de Janeiro, $2 billion loss, and Tokyo, $7.2 billion loss. Now, none of the gains were even a billion. And the highest gain was Vancouver 2010 at $721 million, which is not a bad situation to be in, but it's certainly not in the billions. So the odds are that most games go negative on the balance sheet, and it's not really good. And it's not really looking that way, and particularly when you have to pay for extra security, which I think the Paris government, the Paris prefecture, will have to do. because otherwise I think it could be a really awful situation.
In your research, did you find this to be a concern of anyone's money losing? They certainly compete for this fashionably years ahead, and there are big celebrations when the decision is made to assign the Olympics to this or that city. Do people complain beforehand, or is this just part of doing business?
I think it is part of doing business, and some of it makes sense. If you are running a city which isn't well known globally, it's worth spending over the odds because you get all the TV crews coming over and broadcasting what the city looks like and how civilized it is. And that's a great ad, and maybe it's worth $14 billion or whatever. However, I'm puzzled by why Paris would need that. Paris is a famous city. It's been a famous city for a long time. People know it's lovely, and they know it's attractive, and they want to go. There is almost no need to spend, you know, billions of dollars on doing this. I don't know whether they're going to lose money or not, and I hope they're not going to lose money because it's certainly going to be a good Olympic Games. But you can understand it when it's somewhere like Beijing or Hanoi or somewhere like that that didn't maybe have as much exposure to the rest of the world to spend a lot of money to get themselves on TV and really get people saying, oh, that looks interesting, I'll go there and spend some of my dollars.
Another point of view that I've read about, Simon, because there's a lot of, I mentioned that political turmoil, is that the Olympics are about Paris and the elite who live in Paris because it's exceedingly expensive, more so than I ever remembered. It's almost a gated community for the world's well-to-do. And that is part of the alienation felt by the populace, the National Rally, and the Marxists. That would be France Unbowed. In other words, Macron represents Paris to the rest of France, and they resent Paris's attention grabbing, such as these Olympics. Do you see that?
And they're doing it at taxpayers' expense, not their own expense. And that I think that would get in anyone's throat and in their craw, and it would feel bad. Sorry to interrupt that.
No, I'm just reasoning from outside. You live there now. But you don't hear people complaining. Of course, you live in paradise. Why would they complain? However,
I can understand the attitude, though. I really can understand the attitude. If there are, you know, if you're a multi-billionaire living in Paris in basically a gated community, having an event like that would be fabulous, especially if someone else is paying for it and you can keep your billions. So that is fantastic, and I can understand how that would cause quite a bit of resentment among other people.
The United Kingdom is not invulnerable to this because you note in the most recent elections, there's a lot of dissatisfaction with everything's about London. Everything's about what does London need? What does the London care about? And ever since the Brexit vote, I believe that Scotland's been voicing its alienation. There was that attempt to break away, but I don't think my memory of your reporting on Scotland is that it remains very resentful of everything for London. And this Labour government, I don't know if they're going to change the direction of London, London, London all the time.
I think they'll want to change that. Whether they succeed is a completely different matter. But I certainly know that Keir Starmer's gone up to Scotland to meet John Swinney, who's the first minister of the Scottish Parliament, which is a devolved Parliament, and it has a lot of power to do a lot of things in Scotland. And there is some desire by the Scottish National Party, which is much diminished now, for them to continue their goal or continue their pursuit of independence. Now, I hope Keir Starmer and his ministers and secretaries of state, et cetera, can get Scotland and the ruling part of Scotland to calm down on this and say, okay, it's not so bad. We're getting more from the rest of the UK, or we're more integrated and we're not being given short shrift. Who knows what will happen, but it will be very interesting to watch.
Simon Constable is in Dumfries, the west coast of Scotland. He lives in the south of France, and we're going to take a time travel venture to 1944 when we come back. The invention of the US dollar as the world's reserve economy. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.